Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, December 8th, 2018. This is episode 1547. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Helix. Helix is driven by a simple mission: to empower every person to improve their life through DNA. Follow your DNA to a wealth of actionable insights into your ancestry, health, wellness, and more. Visit Helix, H-E-L-I-X, helix.com to receive up to 40% off when you enter the promo code TechGuy. And by Brex, the first corporate card for startups. Get the card free, and TWiT listeners get the Brex card fees waived in perpetuity at brex.com/TWiT. brex.com/TWiT. And by LastPass, secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/TWiT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got some smartphones to talk about, some smartwatches. We got some augmented reality, virtual reality, real reality. You know what I'm talking about. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach me. You just have to use Skype, and I'll still be free. 8888-ASK-LEO. We are helping you shop this week and next. I guess it's that time of year once again. We're in the midst of Hanukkah. Christmas is coming. I know gifts for your local geek are in order. And I also know how hard it is to procure such gifts. You know, generally, buying a gift for a geek is a challenge for a non-geek, because you don't know what they want and they don't know how to tell you. And, well, actually, that's the best thing to do is ask them. If they tell you, then you're golden. Then you're good. Otherwise, gift cards, always appreciated. And gift cards to geeky places. I mean, Amazon's fine, because there's plenty of geek gear on Amazon. Newegg is another good one. Not a sponsor, but the place a lot of geeks go to buy that kind of stuff. It's always welcome. Cash would be fine. Don't buy them a computer unless you really got the specs from them, or you call me first. Phone, maybe, you know, you can't really go wrong with a phone unless your geek is a young person and wants an iPhone and you give them an Android phone. Although I have to say, I took a little time off over the last couple of days and went to New York for some shows, Broadway shows and stuff. You know, I like to do that once a year, and took my Pixel. I did take a good camera, but I didn't really use it because I had the Pixel 3, and especially that night mode in Pixel 3. Wow, that is amazing. That thing just blows me away, the quality of the images you can get with a smartphone these days. And I would say the same is true of any modern smartphone. So, you know, if you give them a Pixel phone or a Samsung Galaxy phone and they said, but I wanted an iPhone, say, oh, but you'll love the camera. Get them to start taking selfies. They'll forget completely what what they were talking about. What? Huh? No, let's take some more selfies. Man, you see a lot of people taking selfies all the time. That has not gone away, even though the selfie death toll continues to climb. Did you know there's a selfie death toll? Oh, heck yeah. Deaths due to selfies. More than 250 people worldwide, according to the Washington Post last month, more than have died while taking selfies. This is a study that came out from the All India Institute of Medical Sciences. Part of the reason is because selfie-related deaths are more prevalent in India than anywhere else. I don't know what that means, but the police in Mumbai, you remember it as Bombay, perhaps, have identified 16 danger zones. in Mumbai that you shouldn't go to take selfies because they're dangerous. About half of the 27 selfie-related deaths in 2015 occurred in India. There have been at least 54 deaths total while taking selfies in India. The Indian Ministry of Tourism has asked states to identify and barricade selfie danger areas. A man drowned attempting to save a selfie taker in Mumbai, and that was tragic. You know, I would say, now, this is cold of me, but if you see somebody fall in due to the selfie, don't risk your own life to save them. Well, mate, no, you have to, don't you? Ethically, you have to. But you might be thinking at the time, oh, man. No selfie zones were established in certain areas of the Kumbh Mela, because I don't know what that is, because organizers feared bottlenecks caused by selfie takers could spark stampedes. A 2018 study of news reports showed that between October 2011 and November 2017, there were 259 selfie deaths in 137 incidents reported globally. That sounds like maybe there's an average of 2 selfie deaths per incident. I don't know what that means. You're taking a selfie with another person and you say, step back, let's step back a little farther. Whoa! No, I don't know. This is terrible. I shouldn't laugh. The highest occurrence, India, then Russia, United States, and Pakistan. The mean age, 22.9 years old. Male deaths, what a surprise, outnumbering female 3-1. I'm not going there. No, I'm not going there. You're crazy. I'm not climbing up on that rock to take a selfie. So, folks, I guess the moral is be safe out there. With your brand new camera phone when you get it this holiday season. Be safe out there. I think, you know, people do crazy things with their phones anyway. They're not really paying attention. And the selfie thing, you're trying to get that perfect angle, right? I know, because I took some selfies in New York. My wife and I were trying to get, because she was a willing accomplice, but there I was pushing the button, a selfie of us with the beautifully lit Empire State Building behind us. So, no, we didn't stumble into the street while doing it, though, I must say. And I got a fairly good selfie out of it, I'm happy to say. All right, something more serious. On Thursday, the Australian government passed a law, and it's going to begin a wave of laws like this, essentially banning encryption. Or saying that if there is encryption, law enforcement has to have access to the encrypted data. The Assistance and Access Law requires tech companies to help law enforcement agencies break into individuals' encrypted data using secret warrants. The Australian government can even compel a company to serve, this is sad, malware remotely to the target's device. You call it malware. The government says, you know, we just want to put some stuff on there so we can see what they're up to. Where? The goal of the law. This is, I'm reading from Proton Mail. We talked last week about Proton Mail, which is a Swiss encrypted email service. And they're a post about this. The goal of the law is to give police more latitude to investigate criminals. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Using encrypted communication software. Law enforcement doesn't like that because they can't read the messages. Unfortunately, and this is me editorializing here, when you do this, when you put backdoors in software, when you make it possible for the good guys to get into my iPhone, you also make it possible, I'm sad to say, for the bad guys to get into my iPhone. We have ample evidence of malware and spyware created by the NSA, for instance, to spy on, you know, the people we want to spy on, terrorists and bad guys, and that malware leaking out and being used. Well, if you've been bit by ransomware in the last couple of years, you could thank the NSA for the software that allowed that to spread from computer to computer on your network, making possible Petya and its derivatives. Thank you, NSA. So this is the problem. It it endangers the security of everyone who uses online services because it weakens their encryption and privacy. Russia's done this, but that's Russia. Now, Australia, I'd had higher hopes for the democracy in Australia. Britain's got an investigatory powers law, which does something of the same. And the real problem is, as this spreads, it's going to be harder and harder for companies like Apple to encrypt their devices in a way that's safe for us, because they'll have to have back doors in it for government. So just we keep an eye on this stuff because I think it's important, and just passing the news along, the good news. The Australian government now is added to the list of Russia. I presume it's the same in China. And China has other ways of doing this. For instance, they compelled Apple. And this is their right. Every country has its sovereignty and its laws. They said, if you want to sell iPhones in China, the data on Chinese citizens' iPhones must be stored on Chinese servers. Here's the stuff in parenthesis, ... that we have access to, so that we can see what's going on. Not we, the Chinese government. And Apple complied, because they want to sell iPhones in China. And Apple will no doubt comply in Australia. And, that weakens it for all of us, which is kind of a shame. It's not as dangerous as taking a selfie off a cliff, but it's still, it's something to be aware of. I think encryption is so important. And the point made to me, and I'll repeat it by Phil Zimmerman, the guy who invented the best to this day email encryption, PGP, many years ago, almost two decades ago. He said, it's not as if technology hasn't given law enforcement amazing abilities to see what's going on. There's cameras on every corner. Your phone is a tracking device with GPS and a microphone and a camera. There's lots of ways. Law enforcement, he says, today has an HD screen into what's going on in the world. It's just that there are a few blacked dots on it, a few areas they can't see into, and they don't like it. They want a perfect screen. The problem I see is, I want bad guys to be caught. I'm not a fan of international terrorism. I'm not saying that. But if you make it possible for these phones to be unencrypted, it won't just be terrorist phones that'll end up getting unencrypted. It'll be all of our phones. And it won't always be by law enforcement. It will be just as often, I think, by bad guys. And that's the real that it makes us all less secure in general. And that isn't that's not the outcome anybody wants. It's funny, even within the NSA, the agency is divided somewhat between those who say, we've got to have ways and means to get into bad guys' devices and encryption, and the other side, whose mission it is to protect Americans, and who write long and very good papers on how to secure your devices. They understand the risk. It's an interesting conflict, even within the agency. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. I have so many other things I want to talk about, but we will. I promise. But we need to get ready to get your calls. So I'm gonna get the phone angel to work. She's going to start answering those calls. 8888. Ask Leo if you want to give us a jingle. I'd love to hear from you. 8888. Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your phone calls coming up next. 8888 Ask Leo, and we will get to those calls in just a bit. Kim Schaffer getting ready. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Phone angel. Kim Schaffer. Hello.
Good morning.
I love your poinsettia.
There's three of them back
there. Very festive.
Very festive.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm liking it.
Happy festive time. Happy Festivus for the rest of us. I haven't just run out of conversation.
You went to New York.
I did. I saw the boss.
Oh, cool.
Bruce the Boss Springsteen. He was quite entertaining. That's a good show if you get a chance to see it. Well, you won't. Well, actually, you will. Okay, so you won't because it's closing next week.
Oh, sorry.
But the good news is the next day, they're putting it on Netflix.
Okay, well, then that's easier. That's easier than traveling to New York.
Do you like Springsteen's music?
Sure.
You'll like it even more when you hear his story. And he sings it acoustically. And I was realizing, I was listening to his music this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with the Boss, his band is so darn good that I don't listen to the lyrics that much. I go, wow, that's great. It's rocking out. I love it. So it was nice to hear him acoustic because then you can hear
the lyrics.
The poetry, and the man is a poet. So it was really fun to see.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'll check it out.
And then I saw the Harry Potter thing.
Yeah.
That was interesting. You're not a Harry Potter fan. Yeah. No, many people aren't.
Never read a book.
Never read it. See, you would hate it. My wife was like that, and she didn't know what's going on. She's, who's that? Why is he angry at him? And what's he doing now? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could do that with a piece of wood and things like that. And it was just for her. It was long.
I took a kid to a movie when I was babysitting, but I think I probably slept.
Yeah. Lisa's seen the first two movies. It wasn't sufficient
to
really understand and to get the thrills and chills I got because I read those books to my kids and I'm, kind of immersed in that universe.
Yeah.
I think that was generational, though. There were a lot of, it was interesting.
It was a little after my time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or before some younger people's time now. Yep. And then it was the beautiful theater they'd redone for millions of dollars to fit the play and everything. And a surprising number of people came in wizard's cloaks or proclaiming their allegiance to Gryffindor.
People
with
just
scarves.
Want to dress up.
People are strange.
Today in the city, they're doing SantaCon.
It's SantaCon.
It's SantaCon. They're all going to go get drunk.
That's what's so weird about SantaCon
dress
to me.
Up like Santa and elves.
Everybody dresses up like Santa and then goes bar hopping.
Yep.
Which is kind of, to me, a little contrary to the whole. But what do I know? Anyway, that's enough about us. I should probably.
Yeah, so how about...
Actually, I don't even have time now to take a call.
Okay, let's not.
who should I take first when we get back?
Brian in Nashville.
Okay.
And, it kind of relates to your travel. He's got a travel question.
Oh, good.
So.
And I see Dr. Mom. She's in San Diego.
Mom.
Yep.
Yes.
Scott in Orange County. Tim in Salina, Kansas. Well, we got a good lineup. So 8888 Ask Leo. There are a couple of lines still open, and we will take your call someday. Actually, before then, Scott Wilkinson is going to talk home theater.
So keep holding.
I am so I have to apologize to everybody. I talked so much.
It happens.
It's supposed to be a call-in show. I'm acting like I did when I would do overnights, where you just talk because nobody calls. But in fact, there's plenty of calls. So I apologize to everybody involved. Thank you, Kim.
It's nice to
see you. Nice to talk to you. And I will talk to all of the rest of you in a little bit. Yeah. John, coming up, Scott Wilkinson on Home Theater. Stay here. Where does the time go? I think you know that I'm a fan of, getting your DNA. There's so much that you can learn about yourself from your DNA, and I found a new way to do it that it's the most affordable and the most complete. It's called Helix. Helix is on a mission to empower everyone to improve their life through DNA. And I love it because the basic Helix kit, first of all, great prices right now. There's some great deals. If you go to helix.com, and you'll get an even better deal if you enter the promo code TECHGUY. So the base, when I did it, the base genome test was, I think, $50. It's the lowest price I've seen anywhere. But what's great about this is not just your basic, most of these other ones, the other guys, sample little bits of your genome. This is the next generation of DNA testing. They capture 100 times more data than most of those other home DNA tests because they're not doing genotyping. They're doing next generation sequencing that reads all 20,000 or so of the genes that are important because then they unlock the code for proteins. Your body's made of proteins. These genes tell your body what to happen. This is the functional players in the body. It's called not the genome, but the exome. And each time, and by the way, when you get the kit, it's a little vial. You spit into it. You send it back to them. It takes a couple of weeks. They sequence it. They get a terabyte of data out of there. They get everything in the exome, 100%. So you get some really good insights, not just ancestry. Yes, you do get that, but you get real actionable insights that can help you improve your nutrition, your health, your sleep, and more. You get the basic kit, and then you can choose which insights you want to get. They have one that's for wine. If you're a wine lover, you can, based on your exome, figure out what wines you're going to like. I love the genotyping. I did the one with National Geographic that gives you ancestry. They have, if you want to know health information, they partner with Mayo Clinic. In some cases, you can get the kit plus the test. Some cases, you get the insights separately. But go visit the store, and you'll see all of the things. But your first product will get you everything you need to get started, including a prepaid shipping box. You spit into the little tube. You put that saliva sample in the box. They send it to the lab. You'll get your test results. And then you get access to the Helix store. They have over 30 reports, over 200 insights. You could choose the ones that matter most to you. You only pay for the stuff you care about. And you get more than anybody else. You can find out more. And by the way, they're always adding new stuff. Every time I go back to the store, there's new information. Their whole approach is sequence once, query often. They do the sequencing, they get the exome, they have a terabyte of data, and then you can go back and say, I'd like to know more about this, I'd like to know more about that. They've got partners that provide health-related products and make it easy to connect with a genetic counselor to discuss the insights from the DNA. They told me they're doing BRCA down the road, or BRCA. A lot of women want to know what their BRCA status is. One that I like, the Alzheimer's APOE test. You want to know. Doesn't mean you're going to get Alzheimer's. And by the way, the genetic counselors will explain all this for you. But it is one of the genome, the exome traits that are important in knowing this. The Mayo Clinic Gene Guide, carrier check by SEMA4, the APOE test. There's an inherited cholesterol test, inherited diabetes test. When you purchase a partner product from their marketplace, this is for your privacy. They only share the specific parts of the DNA necessary to provide you with the insights you purchased. And they are obsessive about privacy. This is, of all of them, the most secure, most private. They store and use the least amount of data required for every part of the process. Their security guy is good. He's crazy, but he's good. Give the gift of knowledge this holiday season with Helix. Go to Helix, HELIX.com, and get up to 40% off when you enter the promo code TECHGUY. Helix.com, promo code TECHGUY, up to 40% off. We thank Helix for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Bump de bump, the hump de hump. It's time for Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. Yes,
that's me.
He calls himself that.
I do.
Every week.
I wear the geek badge proudly.
I think you should. Absolutely. Hello, Scott. Scott is our home theater geek, our guru, the guy who tells us everything we need to know about big screen TVs, surround sound, Atmos. And yep. Tom Cruise. It's the Tom Cruise update.
Normally, I wouldn't talk about Tom Cruise. I mean, he's an impressive guy, no doubt about it. Does all of his own, most of his own stunts, you know, and so on. But this week, he was in the news in a pretty big way. His latest movie, Mission Impossible Fallout, is being released on to home viewing.
Nice.
On disc and
yeah,
so on
yeah.
This week. And he and the director, McCrary, I believe his name is, came out with what they're calling a PSA, a public service announcement, railing against motion smoothing in TVs.
Really?
Now Chris McCrary. That's what it is. Yes.
Oh, McQuarrie. That's interesting. He's the guy, McHugh, who he was famous for doing music. Uh-oh. It's happening again, Scott. Scott has turned into a robot. So we're going to call you right back, Scott. There's something going on with Skype and Scott. And every once in a while, Scott starts to sound like a robot, which is interesting. McQuarrie was a music was famous, I believe, for his music videos. Now we got Scott back.
I'm sorry, I'm back. Yes.
Yeah, something weird going on.
Weird going on. Anyway, so they put out a PSA, a little video that just rails against motion smoothing, which we've heard before. It's basically in a TV. It's called frame interpolation or motion smoothing, and it basically inserts new frames in between the actual frames of the content. And it looks very fake. It looks very video-y.
Yeah, we've kind of railed against it ourselves. By the way, that's
indeed.
Not – I have the wrong Christopher McQuarrie. He actually wrote The Usual Suspects, which I didn't realize, which is a great movie, and directed The Way of the Gun. All right.
Well, this is Chris McQuarrie.
He's worked a lot with Tom Cruise.
With Tom Cruise, exactly.
Yeah.
And so they and others in the industry have objected to this motion smoothing, which makes movies in particular look like they were shot on video.
Yeah.
They call it the soap opera effect.
Yeah.
Now, it's not so bad for sports. In fact, it's really good for sports. But it's bad for movies, especially those who like – basically, a lot of directors are saying, hey, if you're watching our movie with that feature turned on, you're not seeing it the way we intended it.
Yeah.
And in fact, a number of directors have approached or have written letters to TV manufacturers saying, turn this off by default. At the moment, when
it's
you
on
buy
by
a
default,
new,
isn't it?
If when yeah. you buy a new TV, it's on yeah. by default. And to go find it to turn it off is sometimes quite arcane. You have to go through the menu and then the submenu and advanced features. And then you have to figure out what it's called. Each TV calls this feature something different.
Yeah. And we know there's something in that technology we call the tyranny of the default.
Yes.
If something is the default setting, it will always be, you know, used. I don't know what the number is. I bet we should create a law. We'll call it
99%.
We'll call it Wilkinson's law.
There you go.
That 90% of all users use the default settings.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
Wilkinson's
yes.
law.
Wilkinson's law. I'll take it.
It may be higher. I don't think it's lower. I think you might be right. It might be 99%.
Because,
99%,
yeah.
People just say, yeah, well, this is how it's supposed to be. So why is motion smoothing put on TVs, and why is it the default?
Well, it's put on because it does sharpen motion. So particularly on a movie, which is shot at 24 frames per second, if you've got something moving in the frame, you know, from one frame to the next in the image, or you've got the camera panning fairly quickly, moderately even,
yeah.
things get blurry. And the reason is that each frame lasts, I've forgot the math now, but, 24th of a second.
Right.
If instead you were to shoot it at twice that or at 60 frames per second or at 120 frames per second, things would look a lot sharper, and they do. And so what the TV does is it simulates that. The movie wasn't shot at 30 or 60 or 120. It was shot at 24. So the TV takes each image, and it takes two consecutive frames, and it says, okay, the image, the thing that's in motion is over here in frame one and over here in frame two. We're going to put a frame in between them in which the moving object is halfway between them.
Yeah.
And so that sharpens up the motion, and it does. It's very effective, in fact. But it does...
Oh, in there.
Oh,
I love this effect, but it doesn't help in the communication. I have to say, I think we're going to call Scott back one more time. I think that I maybe misunderstood why these interpolated frames were added. This motion blur thing was added. I thought it was because LCD screens. Let me ask Scott this. I thought it was because LCD screens had a slow response time in the early days, and so as a result, sports. I was just saying, Scott, I thought this was introduced because of the slowness of response time of LCD screens. And so
no,
sports would look blurry. It's not, though.
It's not. It's because of the frame. Well, there might be something there, but still, even so, even with OLEDs that are very fast response,
yeah.
they still display the image like LCDs.
The problem is that people who are, you know, again, the tyranny of the default, who have been using TVs that look like this, are now that's their expectation, and when
exactly, and so Tom Cruise is on a crusade, to
it may be a fool's errand. It may be because I have to say people are not. First of all, if it weren't for you, no one would even know he's on a crusade. This is the first I've heard of it.
Uh-huh.
Second, people are going to say what? What is he talking about? Third, I like my TV the way it is.
Yeah. A lot of people say that about vivid mode, too. They put their TV in vivid mode. And
I have a confession to make, Scott.
Uh-oh.
Scott very nicely, kindly calibrated that big Hisense laser TV. And your calibrations were in the theater mode, right? So if you're in theater mode, you get... But when I watch football, not a Tom Cruise movie, Tom, but only when I watch football, I switch it to vivid mode because the grass looks so great. The colors look so bright.
It looks fluorescent.
It looks
grass.
Great. And then when we're going to go back and watch, you know, whatever, Game of Thrones, I'll switch it back to theater mode because I know that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
But my point being that people do kind of like, as you say, vivid mode. They kind of like the dynamic mode. They kind of like the motion blurring. I don't like the motion blurring. I've actually been on – Tom's late to this train. I've been on this crusade for a while because it looks like – the soap opera effect is aptly named. It looks like everything was shot on video.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I don't like that look. It's too bright. It doesn't look right. It looks plasticky.
Exactly. That's what many people say. And it's true. It does. And people make that same complaint about high frame rate movies, of which there have only been a couple. Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Wow, is that a wild movie? I bought the Blu-ray UHD of that and watched that on my 4K UHD TV. And it's it looks, and I know this was Ang Lee's intent. It looks like they're in the room. It's too...
Yes.
We're not used to seeing it. And did he not have actors... I think he did not have actors wear makeup.
That's correct. They were not wearing makeup.
It's kind of disconcerting because we're used to... You see their freckles and blemishes and wrinkles. Mm-hmm. And it's real. And I'm sure that was his intent.
Exactly his intent.
But you know...
I liked it myself.
Did you? See, I think there's such a thing as too real. I like the mystical properties of movies, where everything
is
magical.
That's the complaint about motion smoothing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, he's our home theater geek, joins us each week at this time, turns into a robot from time to time, but we can live with that. Maybe we know his secret. He is a mechanical man. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Finally, the phones, right after this. Have you tried unplugging and replugging the USB, or is that...
No, but I will if you want.
I didn't want to do it. I've never heard of... Yeah, you know, no, you shouldn't. You're absolutely right.
You want me to try that now?
Yeah, go ahead, and it won't disconnect us. It'll just... We won't hear you, and then we will hear you kind of thing.
Okay, then hang on.
Now we're getting his laptop mic. Which sounds normal.
Okay.
It isn't Skype. Yeah. So it isn't Skype because as soon as you unplugged it, your laptop mic did the right thing. So I do think it's...
It was my interface?
It was the interface. And we've seen that happen before.
Well, yeah, but not for a long time.
No.
So but that's, I mean, it worked. It happened once in a while on my podcast, but very rarely.
Yeah, it might be time to send you a new...
My computer's been on a while.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry if that was my fault. I apologize.
No, that's fine. It's all yours for 3 minutes and 8 seconds.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Boy, wasn't it nothing but tech weirdness today. I mean, that whole video stream thing, and then my Skype and so on. I really regret not having that happen in the middle of the actual segment. But I'm sure Leo vamped just fine. And now I'm way out of sync. And that's weird, Mike B. You're exactly right. I noticed that in the video monitor when I was on. And I hope that the audio was pretty up to Leo and I could still have a conversation. It seemed like that to me. Anyway, so sorry about the video audio sync issue here. We'll just carry on. Hey, Sybil, good to see you. Live long and prosper. audio is fine, Scooter X says. Thank you very much. Glad to know that. So just don't look. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. Let's see. Yes, Dr. Mom, Grandma, you're exactly right. The 25 frames per second, 24. Well, 25 in Europe, 24 in the U.S., is the reason that in Old Western, the wagon wheels look like they're turning backwards. That's exactly correct. Because basically the image, the analog image, is being sampled every 24th of a second. And so meanwhile, the wagon wheels are moving forward. But if the synchronization is just right, it looks like they're moving backwards. In fact, I saw that same effect recently. I was watching Parts Unknown, Anthony Bourdain's movie, TV series. And poor Anthony, may he rest in peace. I was one of his episodes, many of them, there he's in an airplane. And in this one, he was in a prop plane. And the props looked like they were going backwards or had a weird kind of sync with whatever camera he was using. So that's exactly correct. That is exactly correct. Let's see. Who else can I talk to here briefly? I've got 54 seconds left. That must have been, let's see. Well, anyway, let me ask you, let's see. Oh, Tim Elliott, what's your favorite smart TV platform? That's a good question. It's probably Roku because my favorite online streaming platform is Roku. So I would have to say then if Roku's built into a TV, that's great.
Would you like to stick around for the top of the hour, my friend?
I'd be happy to.
All right. Now that we fixed the robotic blues. All right, Scott. Thank you. We'll talk in a bit.
You bet. Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. I really love you, baby. Let's get to the phones. What do you say? What do you say? Starting with line two, Brian in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Brian. Thanks for hanging on.
Hello. How are you doing, Leo?
I am well. You called early in the show to get on, and then Leo kept you on hold for 45 minutes. I apologize, but you're on now.
Well, good.
I am gratitude. My gratitude. What can I do for you?
Well, I am just returning from a little trip to Florida. I heard you just went on a trip as well.
I did.
And I have tried so many different bags, backpacks, cable management devices.
I'll show you what I use. In fact, I still have my...
My wife is probably like, okay, we could have put two kids through college on the stuff you've
there
got.
There are a lot of cable management choices. And, of course, you can do this the cheap thing, which is just use twist ties. There's two problems, of course. One is to keep cables wrapped and available without having been tangled. I tend to buy cables nowadays from a company called Nomad that come with the cable ties built in. They're little leather straps. They're a little more expensive.
Right. I do that on Amazon. You can see on the usually when you buy them, you can see they already have the little attachments on them. But
this is another company I'm looking at called Metrans. I had to buy a lot of Type C cables, so when I bought them, and they're braided, which means that they're going to be a little bit less tangly. But I'll show you the other thing that I do that I really like. I don't know why I say I'm showing you because this is the radio, but I'll show you in your mind. These are I use also Nomad cables, which come with rubber ties on them, and of course you can buy ties. I've got a whole bunch of Velcro ties that come in a reel. But this to me is the best cable management system of all. It's called Gridit. My friend Andy Inatko told me about them. GRID-IT. And what it really is just a stiff board, kind of probably cardboard inside, wrapped in fabric. And then on one side, it's just got a bunch of almost random rubber. How do I describe this? It's a grid of elastic, not like rubber bands, they're fabric covered, but elastic straps. And it's completely...
I see it on the video screen.
Yeah, so I'm showing it on the... So the idea is you keep the stuff that you need, and because it's kind of a random arrangement of straps, it's not... You know, you can keep it in different things. So I have power adapters in there. I have cords in there. Here's my my travel router, my micro router, which is about the size of a USB key. So it's really good for that kind of thing. And then it's all in one kind of they're different sizes, by the way. They come in I have a smaller one, but they also come in larger ones. But they're just right because of the stiff backing for backpacks. They go right in the slot of a backpack. And they also have a couple of additional features. They have, you can hang them. They have a little strap at the top. And then it has a zipper pouch on the back, and that's where I keep my USB keys, which I don't want to fall out of these rubberized straps. So this packet is very compact. I really think this is a great way to try travel. And it's not too expensive. Andy Inako, who is the king of travel stuff, told me about this. It's called Grid It, and you can get it from Cocoon, CocoonInnovations.com. And you'll see when you go to CocoonInnovations.com a variety of different sizes. And they even have a video that shows in a much nicer way. Their grid is well aligned. They're obviously very OCD. Mine looks like, I don't know, it's just a little haphazard. I've got just stuff jammed in there. But I found this to be the best way to keep track of stuff.
I'm actually using that. That's probably the best. And the nice thing is I probably have too much stuff. My issue is I probably am trying to keep too much. I probably should just
take what you
I
have
need,
to figure out what you need. Now, I'm going to give you a couple other things then, if you've already tried the Grid It and it's not done. Anthony Tortoriello, who is a photographer and is regular in our chat room as A Tortaloha, recommends the cable management systems from Think Tank, which make, in my opinion, the best camera bags out there. They also make cable management sacks. And I've had a number of these from Case Logic as well. What these are, they're just zippered, you know, pouches, but they have clear sides, so you can see what's in them. And that's one of the other issues with cable
that's
management.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I never found one that had clear.
That's a really good idea.
I do find myself always reaching in, grabbing stuff, pulling it out. No, that's
so what is
it.
This? Yeah. And then you have to have the discipline to say, okay, this one, this side is for batteries. This side is for cables. This side is for adapters. But I've had these travel pouches for a long time. Yeah, my discipline's
terrible. My discipline thing is, it's not that it's terrible. I think I have to have everything because I work in coffee houses a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And you would be surprised how many times, I mean, almost every time I'm there, someone didn't have a cable, and of course they're on some older cable, and I have it, sure enough. But guess what? It's because my backpack's so
full. You don't take anything out. Let me recommend these Nomad cables. This is actually a good little gift guide thing. They're a little more expensive, but they have adapters for the three most common kinds of plugs. So they have a micro USB and then an adapter on it for Type-C and Lightning. So one cable does triple duty. I have a few of these. They're more expensive. They're braided cables. They also come with cable ties. So one cable, though, does the duty of three. And that is nice to have that kind of flexibility. I don't have to worry. You know, for instance, I still have stuff that uses micro USB. I wish it would die. But that because it's on here, as well as the more modern Type-C and the weird Apple Lightning, I have everything I need. On the other end is a USB Type-A. The other thing, I don't know if you ever learned this, but in my ill-spent youth, I learned how to wrap cables. I don't know if you know the over-under technique for wrapping cables, but a lot of times cables, you'll wrap them up, you'll just go round and round and round, and then they're tangled when you undo them. There's a way of wrapping that, you know, the all AV guys know, where you go overhand and then you go underhand for the next loop. And then overhand, and then underhand. It's kind of hard to describe. I'm sure if you look on YouTube, there's a video explaining how to do it. The advantage of doing this is that then cables just come unwrap without tangles. I don't know. It's magic. It's topological magic. But that is another good thing to learn. I don't know why
I've never heard of that.
Yes. It's a very useful technique, the over-under. And you don't wrap it too tight because cables will get worn if you do. I have a friend, David Prager, who has some sort of technique for tightly wrapping cables and turns them into a bow tie, it looks like. And then he doesn't need a tie. But I worry about that stressing the cables a little bit. You don't want to remember the cables, there's wires in there. Too much bending and twisting and too tight will make a problem. But I think the over-under wrap is fine for cables.
I guess I'll YouTube that.
Yeah.
And the very last thing
is
and of course I've got about five or six of those, and I've pretty much given away as gifts because I'm not impressed with, because they don't last that long. But because I'm using a MacBook Pro with Parallels, there are times where you're in a coffee house and you don't have a plug. So this MacBook Pro, I'll be there 5 or 6 hours sometimes. This MacBook Pro, it'd be nice to have something. It doesn't have to totally recharge it. It just has to be able to, you know, if I'm down to half an hour,
yes,
I can plug it in and it'll last me another 2 hours maybe. But I didn't know if you had any good solution for that for a MacBook Pro versus – these little 5,000, 10,000 that all they're really for is phones.
Yeah, you're looking for, what you're looking for is not so much how much they store, because, I mean, obviously if you want to fill the whole battery up, well, that's another matter. But what you're really looking for is the ability to send you a lot of watts. Yes. So the that's a trick, because there are different standards for this. There's Qualcomm's Quick Charge 3. There's USB-C power delivery, sometimes called PD. And Apple has, of course, its own fast charging. And a lot of this is driven by how much wattage is coming off of that thing. So I always buy, I do look at capacity, but I also look at how many watts. I think that's not watts. Yeah, how many watts, which is how much it's being pushed down the line. I think that's all very important. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more calls right after this. What a great, that was a great call, because I got a chance to do all of those fun holiday bits. Now we return you to Robot Scott.
We shall see. My audio has been cutting out, the incoming audio has been cutting out a number of times that last segment. So I'm going to have to reboot my computer, of course.
Yeah, but that's it. But your sync is back now, and sounds good. And I think replugging that thing. But yeah, before every show, I would reboot everything.
I have learned my lesson.
Yes. All right, Scott, have fun. You see the timer.
Thank you. I do. Thank you very much. Oh, and it's even in minutes and seconds, as we learned last week. That's great. So anyway, hi, everybody. We've been talking in the chat room about TV platforms, smart TV platforms. I said that my favorite is Roku. And somebody asked, well, would you rather have Roku in the TV or a separate box? And that's a kind of a tough question. If you have it in your TV, it's simpler because you control it with the same remote as the TV, or you might have a universal or something. But in any event, it's simpler. It's more convenient. But the Roku box, you know, you can update it when you need to. You can buy a new one if you need to. The one in the TV is pretty – it's there and that's it. So I prefer the external for that reason. But and sometimes that might mean using two remotes, one for the TV, one for the Roku box. But most of us now have universal remotes. It means you'd have to program the universal remote to operate the Roku box as well as the TV and the audio system and everything else, which is what I do. It is another step of complexity. But we're all geeks on this bus, are we not? I know I am. So let's see. Oh, Mike Heiss in the chat room. He's reviewing a TCL TV with Roku and Roku wireless speakers, which he says are interesting. And Twisted Mister said, does that mean not great? And he said, no, it is. It's interesting. It's an interesting technology. Basically, you have these two little speakers.
So I'll translate what Scott is saying.
I got lost again.
Sorry
about that.
It's all right. We had everybody running in here. I was out getting a cup of coffee. All right, we're back.
Okay. Now I will definitely. I learn my lesson and reboot every time. Twisted Mister had asked about. You know, would I like Sonos better than my Conrad Johnson Dynaudio system, which is like, holy man, that's just great. I mean, that's a serious system you got there. What is it? Dynaudio, Conrad Johnson Benchmark, Conrad Johnson preamp, probably Benchmark amplifier, Shoe subwoofer. That's a true audiophile system right there. And so, no, Sonos is not going to sound as good, but you know, you're not going to be able to put that kind of a system in every room and stream to different rooms and have the whole house audio, wireless audio that Sonos provides. So they do two different things, I would say. let's see here. Oh, Mike B., how was Tuba Christmas? Tuba Christmas was great. We had a wonderful time at Tuba Christmas. Had almost, I'm guessing, close to 1,000 people in the audience, which was wonderful. And we had 117 registrations, so at least 117 tuba players on the stage. Probably a few more because there are a few who sneak in without registering, or they get there at the last minute or something like that. But we had 117 registrations, almost 1,000 people in the audience. The professional group sounded wonderful. The big group sounded wonderful. It was an excellent experience all the way around. Everybody had a great time. My wife sang "O ihr kleine Lichterlech," which is a Yiddish Hanukkah song that nobody in the audience knew the words to. And so that was an arrangement by my wife and me, actually. And so she went ahead and sang the song with the tuba accompaniment, and that was lovely. Just lovely. So it was great. Thank you for asking, Mike B. I really appreciate it. I hope more of you can come out next year. I don't know exactly when it's going to be, but it'll be I'll let you know, certainly. Sing "Bicycle Built for Two" like Hal. Yeah, I did get kind of robotic there. Hopefully it'll stay good for the next 3 minutes, and then I will certainly reboot my computer. So yeah, everything went really good. We didn't record at Tech Dino. I've recorded it in the past. There were some circumstances this year that I just didn't manage to do it this year. On our website, tubachristmasla.com, there is a series of videos that were recorded in 2012, I believe. So it gives you an idea of what it is. I hope you'll go check it out. It's in the gallery page. So you go to tubachristmasla.com, click on the gallery tab, and you will see it there. Marsworm is asking, why do they include AM/FM tuners with AV receivers? I can never pick up my locals on them. you know, I don't know if the included antennas are crappy or what. That's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to it. I guess it's a legacy thing.
They wouldn't be receivers if they didn't have AM/FM tuners.
Right, exactly. That's by definition.
They go together, hand in hand.
Hand in hand.
Jamer B got that one right.
Yeah, if you don't want a receiver, buy an integrated amplifier.
Yeah. If you don't want a receiver, buy an integrated amplifier. That makes
exactly.
sense.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Hey, sorry, everybody, for all the tech problems. I will have my computer rebooted.
We got 30 seconds. It's perfect. Thanks, Scott. Have a good one.
You bet.
All right.
Thanks,
take
Leo.
Care.
See ya. Bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got all that jazz at 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Actually, we were talking before the break about power, and that is a good geek gift, but tricky. Right? It's a good stocking stuffer is power adapters. There is a coming revolution, actually, in several areas of this. Of course, the first one is already here, which is the move away from type A, those square USB connectors, and the old micro USB to type C connectors. And I don't know how to, I was trying to describe these to a friend, And I don't really. They look like a slot with rounded corners. I guess is the closest you can get. And like Apple's Lightning adapter, USB Type C adapters work in any orientation. So you can put them. You can't put them in upside down, which was always a problem with micro USB. You know, you'd have to peer at the connector and then peer at the port and see if you got it oriented right and all that. And it was very easy to accidentally jam it in wrong and break it. And so that was a big improvement with Type C. The unfortunate thing about Type C is that the way the adapter looks will not tell you what the capabilities of the connector or the battery are. And that's unfortunate because, you know, we're used to looking at a connection and saying, oh, yeah, well, I know what that is. That's a printer port or that's a serial port or that's a USB port. And, you know, and even with USB, when they went from USB 2 to USB 3, they at least colored the connector, the Type A connector. You know, they have little, I don't know if anybody even noticed this, but they're blue when that's USB 3.1. Have you know, if, nobody noticed that. Briefly, there was a USB 3.1 connector that was a weird long connector with a dip in it. That didn't really take off. This is an industry that is just notorious for confusing people and making a hash of things, partly because it's a dozen or 100 different companies, none of which can agree, and there's committees, and oh, it's hopeless. So that's revolution number one, is the move to Type-C. And I think eventually everything will be Type-C. So, you know, Apple finally moved its iPad to Type-C. That tells me the iPhone will move from Lightning to Type-C next year, almost certainly. Their computers are already Type-C for charging. Most Windows machines are Type-C for charging. That's nice because it means you can use, you know, you can have a variety of Type-C chargers spread throughout the house and plug anything in anywhere. What will change is the speed with which things charge. And that comes down to two things. The amperage of the device, well, really the total wattage of the charger. But wattage, if you remember your high school electronics, watts equals volts times amps. And so voltage on USB is almost always limited to 5. So we often say, well, the power of the charger is the number of amps. If it's a 2.4 amp charger, it means it's 5 volts times 2.4 amps, which means it's 12 watts, that kind of thing. That's one of the factors. The other, it's so complicated. The other factor is there are a number of quick charge technologies. Qualcomm has its quick charge 3.0. There is a USB standard called power delivery, or PD. Apple has its quick charging. Samsung has its quick charging. Google has its quick charging. So, If you almost need to know the device and then buy a charger that says specifically supports PD or Quick Charge 3 or Samsung Charge, it's crazy. My experience has been that most devices will rapid charge or quick charge if they're provided with enough watts. But some, in some cases, it's not just the wattage. There's a chip in there that says, I'm a Quick Charge 3, it's okay to use me, something like that. I'm guessing. I don't know what they really say to each other. And then there's wireless charging. And there is, yes, wireless quick charging. So it's gotten crazy. But there's another new technology coming that I'm very excited about. And I almost would say, you know, it's okay to buy a battery or a little wall wart, little charger now. But you're going to probably want a gallium arsenide device in the next year or so. The number of companies are starting to put out gallium arsenide based chargers. The advantage of this, it's a new, so you're familiar with silicon. That's the semiconducting, actually it's a non-conducting chemical used in the production of chips. And it's also used, by the way, in the production of these chargers. Gallium arsenide replaces silicon and has some really nice properties. One of which is it's more efficient. It can be used in chips eventually. I think it might be used in chips to make smarter processors. But for now, it's often used in diodes, field effect transistors, and integrated circuits. And the first way we're seeing these now, the first wave of gallium arsenide technologies will be in these wall wart power chargers. And the chief effect is they can be much smaller. So Anker and others are coming up. Anker has a golf ball sized wall charger that is really powerful for its size. And those are, I think, what people are going to end up wanting. Now, they're not out yet, and so I'm a little nervous. It may be that there's a reason these aren't out yet. I don't know. Maybe they burst into flames. I don't know. But the Anker charger, as soon as they start selling it, and I'm sure they will soon, the PowerPort Atom PD1 is a Type-C PD power delivery charger, size of a golf ball, that does 27 watts. So that, for a lot of people, will be the charger for their phone, for their tablet, even a slow charger for a laptop. 27 watts is a little low for a laptop. You probably want 60 or more. But it still will charge. And, you know, if it charges overnight, that's still good. But it'll charge a phone or a tablet faster than anything out right now. Apple ships its iPad with a 17-watt charger. This is 27 watts. And as I said, in general, the more watts, the faster the charging. So I'm looking forward to seeing these new chargers like this PowerPort, Atom, other companies. Anker's, I think, a very good company, by the way, if you're out looking for stocking stuffers for geeks and you're looking for chargers or battery packs, anker.com. Very good. They do a lot of great stuff. And we're starting to see other companies with gallium arsenide chargers. There's one from a company called RAV, R-A-V, Power, that is a wall charger that's basically flat. It's designed to plug into the wall and not protrude very much. And it has 45 watts of power, of PD power, which is, I think, adequate for a Nintendo Switch or a MacBook Air. It's one of the smaller portable devices, and certainly more than adequate for a phone or tablet. So I think, get ready. I think the, sometimes they call it GAN, G-A-N. Gallium arsenide is going to be a very important technology in chargers. Now you know more about chargers than you probably ever wanted to know. And you're still, I'm sure, as I am, confused by the whole mess the industry's made of this. 8888-ASK, Leo, that's the phone number. We're going to get back to the calls in just a second. Finally. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up, too. I think that's all I have to say. Let's take a break. More to come right after this. Say again? It's Chris Marquardt's tomorrow. Johnny Jett's coming up. Sorry. Johnny Jett's coming up. Well, hello, everybody. And the listening audience, the Tech Guy podcast, brought to you today by Bricks. This is a credit card, a business credit card for startups. And I know, as a small business owner, how valuable Bricks could be. It's the first corporate card for startups. Now, let me tell you why you want to look at Bricks, B-R-E-X. First of all, 5-minute online application. It's very easy, very simple. Go to brex.com/twit. You can start the process. You'll be done before this ad is done. Underwriting is based not on your credit, but on the cash in your bank account, which means they can offer your company 10 to 20 times higher limits than other corporate credit cards, and there's no personal liability required. And if you're an entrepreneur, that sounds like heaven, doesn't it? I know it does for me. I don't want to be on the hook. Boy, and they really are focused on the corporate credit card. High-value rewards specifically tailored to modern businesses. 7X on rideshare. 7 times the rewards on rideshare. 3 times on restaurants and travel. 2 times on software. There is literally no limit on how many points you can earn. And here's the best part. You can redeem the points for statement credit on your transactions. It's like money in your pocket. Exclusive offers with some of the best technology brands, too. Services like AWS, Google, Salesforce, WeWork. I know so many small businesses and entrepreneurs who have offices in WeWork use the Brex card. You'll get some great offers. They underwrite your company, not you. That's really important. That means there's no minimum operating history. Great for startups. There's no painful paper application. And again, no personal liability required. Brex uses the cash raised by your business to extend credit. It doesn't require a credit score. It doesn't require a social security number. It doesn't require a security deposit. Yes, it's a real credit card. It's powered by the Visa network. I love it when I use it. One of the great things about Brex, I used it the other day at a restaurant. I get a text saying, got your charge. Take a picture of the receipt. I said, oh. So I responded to the text message with a picture of the receipt. It automatically matched it to the transaction and categorized it. Ready to go for our major accounting software program. We use QuickBooks, but that's so awesome. It works with all the major accounting programs. You know exactly what you spent the money on. It is fantastic. Brex offers employees instant access to online virtual credit cards. So you sign up now, you'll have a credit card this afternoon, and a physical credit card comes in the mail shortly thereafter. It took a day. I got it right away. Every employee can have a corporate card, but as you will want, real-time limits on those cards, and you can adjust it at any time. Sometimes I have to do that. John, you've spent too much this month, and turn it down a little bit. I love the expense management because it's so easy to do. You get that text message. Yes, that was it. This is the receipt. That's it. Throw the receipt away. I don't need it anymore. No more receipt envelopes. Oh, I hate that. Join the thousands of startups and tech companies who use Brex, B-R-E-X, to manage their growing business needs and earn valuable rewards while doing so. If what I described sounds good to you, and it ought to, we love it. You can get your card free, and Twit listeners get Brex card's fees waived forever in perpetuity. But you got to go to brex.com/twit. Free card and no fees in perpetuity, brex.com/twit. And we thank Brex for their support. It is a really great corporate card. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, I got it wrong. There's gallium in it, but gallium arsenide is an older technology that was used, attempted to be used to make microprocessors. It turned out to be not a great technology. Gallium nitride, instead of arsenic, they use nitrogen to dope the gallium. Gallium nitride is the new technology. GAN. G-A. I got that right. G-A-N. Not gas. Not GAN. Thank you to the chat room for noting and correcting me. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, Dr. Mom. She is a... Now, are you moving to San Diego forever, or you just go there during the winter?
Eventually, we're going to move to San Diego forever. Right now, we're snowboarding.
Nice. And because it's freezing in New York.
Oh, yeah. I am right now laying by the swimming pool.
I don't want to hear it.
Under an umbrella. Hey. It's a good life.
She's visiting her grandchild, which is exciting. So she's Dr. Grandma now.
Right.
And you are our, we should say, our Amazon Echo expert. We don't use the A word around here because we don't want to trigger anybody's Amazon Echo. But you had some news.
Yeah, a couple of things have come up while you were away. I'm going to go less interesting one first. If you go to the app and go to communications, you're going to see Skype there now. You can now use your Amazon devices to use Skype calling.
So we've been able to use Echoes to call one another, to call another Echo. And I think, didn't they add the ability to call a phone at some point?
You have two abilities. You can link it to your cell phone.
Right.
You can call out using your cell phone. Or you could get that little $25 box, hook it to your landline, and then use it as landline, which actually is nice because I've got a couple of Echoes here. I'm setting up the house here. My phone rings in New York, and I can answer it here.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, so it has your, it's attached to your phone number. That's cool. And then there's the third technique, which is echo-to-echo calling, but that's kind of limited. So now they can use Skype as well. That's really cool. Is it a full Skype?
Correct.
It's audio, obviously. Or does it work with video on the Echo show?
I don't have any friends who have video Skype.
Right.
So
we'll have to try it.
It's the same limitation, however. You cannot hook up a headset, so you're on a speakerphone.
Got it. Yeah, that to me is a bit of a limitation because a speakerphone, while okay, is not great.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried the same thing. They just don't have the drivers in to use a Bluetooth headset. Remember, none of these Echo devices have a plug for a headphone jack.
What's funny is they do all have Bluetooth, however.
Right, but they don't listen.
They never enabled it. I wonder if that's something they'll add eventually. Okay, so good. So Skype, that's nice.
Now, here's the one that's more interesting.
Yeah.
Next week, Apple Music shows up on the Amazon Echoes.
That's a shocker, to be honest. Amazon and Apple have kissed and made up. For a while, you couldn't buy any Apple devices in the Amazon store, except through third parties. But they've kind of made friends.
Yeah. I think this is going to kill the HomePod. Because why do you need the HomePod?
Yeah, the only thing the HomePod did was allow you to listen to Apple Music. It was a good speaker, but I think that you can tie your Echo to better speakers. And I think this is going to be the gift of the season. Now, don't tell them, I haven't decided who in the family is going to get it, but you can now tie your Echo to a big mouth Billy Bass.
Oh no!
Oh yes! Oh, yes. And so it is a Bluetooth speaker. So the Echo you still have to have an Echo Dot or something that you can talk to. But then the output of the Echo Dot will come through the Billy Bass. And instead of singing, remember, it used to sing, "Don't worry, get happy." It now be happy. It now will lip sync Echo commands and responses.
Don't give it to me or it is flying off the cliff. golf.
It's either Lisa or Michael. You think Lisa might not take to it. I think it's going to be a Michael gift, our 16-year-old.
Yeah, that sounds like
he'll want that in the room. I've been, you know, the truth is, I've been trying to get an Echo in the room for ages in his bedroom, so because I want to be able to say, Michael, time to get up, come to breakfast, come to dinner, that kind of thing, using the Echo drop-in feature, the ability to burst commands throughout the house. But he keeps unplugging and taking out. But I figure if it's attached to a big mouth Billy Bass, maybe. He will keep it.
Maybe. That's a big M on that maybe.
Dr. Grandma, thank you for the Echo update. I appreciate it.
Well, there's two more things coming out, too.
Oh, good. What?
The Echo input is shipping. This is basically a dot without a speaker.
You're the only person I know who would buy this thing.
Well, I'm going to the house I'm moving into has this in-the-ceiling speakers with a receiver. I'm going to plug it into that and see how it works.
I guess it would work well with a big mouth Billy Bass, actually.
Probably.
You don't need the dot, which has its own speaker. You get the Echo input, and that, yeah. Can you get that today? Oh, look at that. $35 is a little pricey.
I got it for $25. I got it on the early buy.
Yeah. It will be released December 12th, they say. So that's
right.
This week.
Mine is already, it's, you know, in the ship like they did with the Harry Potter books where it's sitting at the distributors, and I'll get it on the 12th. But, and then one other thing, do you still use SmartThings?
I have the hub and I haven't hooked it up, but yeah, SmartThings. I don't have the most recent one. This is a home hub that Samsung eventually bought, and they're going to make it really the hub for a lot of Samsung stuff. Are you a SmartThings user?
I use it because I like it's an open platform.
Works with everything. Yeah.
You can now, the one thing it didn't really work with very well were the Echoes. You could kind of give commands to the SmartThings, you know, like, check things.
Right.
Somebody wrote an app, and you can now use every Echo in the house as a speaker for SmartThings.
So you would say have a routine that turned down the lights, lock the doors, put the cat out for the night.
Michael is sneaking out the window.
Oh, it can talk.
Now, instead of having to have a different a Sonos speaker or, you know, the
or a big mouth Billy Bass.
No, that doesn't work. You have to get the sound from the SmartThings to the Echo. There's an app now.
I got it. And so it's not Bluetooth. It's not connected. Otherwise, it has to be done in software on the Echo.
It's done in software. It's free software. You have to go to GitHub, get the code, paste it in.
Oh, please. Really? Then, have you done that? Are you going to do that?
Of course I have.
You're going to compile the code yourself?
Well, no. Somebody else has compiled the code.
Oh, good. All right.
All you have to do is a cut and paste.
Behoove me to say, be very careful when you're doing that kind of thing, that you trust the source for the code.
Yeah, this one I trust the source of the code. But now, instead of having to buy extra speakers and such for things like, I'll give you an example. I have a open and close sensor on the refrigerator in the garage.
Oh, that's nice.
If it's open for 10 minutes, I get a notification.
Oh, that's actually really handy. Yeah. Or a pipe burst, you have a water sensor attached to your SmartThings. It could then, the Echo could then say, hey, can you have it say anything you want? Could it say, Dr. Mom, your pipes are bursting?
Yeah. You go into the SmartThing apps and it'll say whatever you want it to say.
Now, if I could just.
I don't think it'll swear at you.
If I could just hook that up to the big mouth Billy Bass, I could say, hey, Michael, time to get up. That would be cool.
Actually, you can. If you want to, I will email you the link for the code.
Dude, send it to me so I can send it to James so we can put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. So everybody can have access. But again, remember, Dr. Mom approved, but always be careful when you're downloading strangers' code from the internet. Thank you, Dr. Mom. Enjoy the sunshine and your grandchild. All right.
Oh, yeah. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Lillian. Bye-bye. Dr. Mom, all right, we're going to have to make a segment for her. She's our Echo expert, keeping us up to date. Now, I said something wrong again, and I'm not talking gallium arsenide. I thought that Chris Marquardt was coming up, but he's not. He's tomorrow, our photo guy. Coming up next, Johnny Jett, our travel guy, to help you travel like a rock star using digital technology. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stay right here. What did you say? You said, listen, he's Johnny Jett, our travel guru. Hello, Johnny.
How you doing, Leo?
Did your ears burn the other day?
No.
I was, let's
hear it.
I was talking with somebody you know of, the legendary comic Steve Martin. He said, give my regards to Johnny Jett.
Are you serious?
Steve likes to travel, and we all like to travel. And we all like to travel
awesome.
Like a rock star. Yeah, he's a fan.
That just made my whole year.
I thought it might. That's why I passed it along to you.
Thank you. My gosh, unbelievable. I got to tell my dad. He's going to be like, what? That is so cool.
So,
speaking of
you've got a little cold, don't you? You got a little cold.
Yeah, you know, I was traveling. I went to New York this week for the night to go to the Point Sky Award ceremony.
Which fun.
They had another American celebrity hero there, Captain Sully.
Man. Did you get to meet Sully Sullenberger?
You know, I did not. I was next to him, and I, you know what?
You didn't want to bug him.
It wasn't the time to bug him. And I thought I would see him later, and of course, he took off a little early, so I did not get to. But I've seen him multiple times in hotels. I don't want to bug him. There's always a time to bug them and that was not the time.
So the points guy is kind of your competition, though, isn't he?
Yeah, kind of. But in this business, travel is so big that there's so much business for everybody. So I always say I really don't have any competitors because I'm myself. I mean, no one else can duplicate what I do. It's basically my personality and my style.
That's right. That's right.
But in terms of like selling credit cards and things like that, yes, we're competitors. But, you know, he's a good guy and they put out good work. And
went to his awards. Did you win an award?
Yeah. No, I did not. But I was actually sitting at the winning table that won all these like credit card awards.
Nice.
Which was cool. But
there is a points guy, right? I always think it's Zach, but he works for the points guy.
Yeah, Zach is the editor and editor in chief, but he's actually the editor at large.
He's not the points guy himself.
No, he's not. No, the points guy is Brian Kelly.
But he's living somewhere in Bali right now, enjoying the fruits of his labors.
He could be, but no, he works hard and he travels hard as well. But they do a great job in terms of delivering information.
But you got a cold going to New York. You know, it's funny because I thought I might get a cold because I was in New York for just a couple of days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, to see some Broadway shows. It's always a risk, isn't it, when you get in a plane? I think a lot of people think I'm going to get on a plane and I'm taking my chances.
Well, I think I got it when I got back home because my mother-in-law's here and she has a cold that my
Isn't
wife
that
gave
the irony?
Her.
Isn't that the irony? Yeah.
You know, I was fortunate. I have American Airlines status, and I got upgraded for free on both legs. So there's not a lot of people around me, and none of them were sick around me.
Do you think it's cleaner in first class? Is that what you're saying?
It definitely is because there's less people.
There's fewer people, yeah. I bring with me travel wipes, you know, the handy wipes and wipe down surfaces. But I bet you it's cleaner in first class because they probably clean it more, right? Because you're paying more.
It's definitely not cleaner in first class.
No.
You definitely need to bring those wipes.
I do. I wipe everything.
You know, I watch people, including in first class, where they blow their nose, their snot hands, and then touch the controller.
Lisa got pink eye. I don't know where, but she got pink eye from some surface.
Could have been first class. So you do have to wipe that down. Although, you know, Jack gets on the plane and he's putting his mouth on everything, including the window. And I'm like, please don't.
Save time. Wipe Jack's mouth down.
Yeah. So anyway.
Jack is his baby.
Yes.
Two-year-old. Not his terrier.
Yeah.
So help us travel more, more in style using technology. You got a website for us?
I do. So, here is actually a cool app. It's called Uplift. Have you heard of this one?
No.
So this is for people who are traveling long distance. It's supposed to be a jet lag solution. It costs $9.99 a year. It's available both Android and iOS.
Is it a medicine?
No, it's not a medicine. So what this guy does, he's a German doctor who who actually has a PhD in biology and physiology and is heavily involved in body and mind related research. And I guess he traveled a lot between Germany and Australia, and he really created this to, you know, relieve jet lag. So what he did is this app, you download it And then you put in your travel information, departure and arrival times. And then the app shows you which acupressure points you should be.
Oh, please. Does this work?
Supposedly.
Never underestimate the power of the placebo, my friends.
True, but they tested 500 travelers,
yeah,
and 92% of them had a success rate.
Yeah, because they believed it. Did you ever do the one where you squeeze your toes on the rug, like you grip the rug? That's supposed to fix it too.
No, but I do believe in pressure points. I remember one time I had a cramp in my leg, and my mom's like, "Grab your lip in this one spot and pinch it." And sure enough,
grab your lip. Yeah, because you're distracted by the pain in your lip.
And there you grab your bottom lip, and you squeeze it, and it went right away. It was like my hamstring was pulling or had a cramp in it.
Really?
I do believe in
magic.
Traditional Chinese medicine and acupressure. So
I'm the hard-headed skeptic. You know me. A man of science.
I had asthma. I would not go to the mailbox without my inhaler. For 10 years at least. And then I was cured by a Chinese doctor in Malaysia of asthma. I don't even carry my inhaler now except in my travel bag, and I rarely use it.
That's
and I used
awesome.
To use it 7 times a day. So I totally believe in this traditional Chinese
medicine.
Did
you ever make a fist with your toes, though? Did you ever do that?
It's
supposed to cure jet lag. And then a listener, and I thank him profusely, gave me a very rare book, but it involved such elaborate changes in diet weeks before the trip, during the trip, and after the trip that I just never did it. It was too much work. I'm sure it would cure jet lag because you'd be exhausted from figuring out what to eat and what not to eat.
Everybody is different, especially with jet lag. So what works for me is that I try to get on local time as soon as possible. So if I'm going to New York.
But you didn't do that for a one-day trip.
No, I didn't. I stayed on L.A. time.
We stayed on California time. Yeah. We were going to bed at 2 a.m., waking up at noon.
Same thing.
That was my problem. Fine, yeah.
I'd go to bed late. But again, you just try to get on local time. I used to carry a watch. I'd set my watch as soon as we took off onto wherever we're going. Yeah. And you try and eat whatever. So, you know, if you're leaving L.A. and going to Europe, you don't want to be eating a full dinner at 5 o'clock in the evening. You want to start eating breakfast.
So the good news is Dr. Krebs' Uplift app is free, right?
No, it's not free.
Oh, it's not free. What a surprise.
It's $9.99.
Uplift, travel without jet lag. It's available I see it on Android. Is it iOS as well?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Definitely.
So search for Uplift and jet lag.
Yes.
And it works for you, Johnny.
Hey. Listen, I haven't used it. I have my own. I fortunately do not really need it. I'm Johnny Jetlag. I'm always jetlag.
You're always jetlag, no matter where you are. It doesn't matter.
Jetlag right now. I've been here for a day.
Johnny, I hope your cold gets better. Give my love to your beautiful wife and your adorable boy. And safe travels. Are you going anywhere for Christmas?
Yes, actually, I'm traveling a lot. So are you working? And actually, I won't be able to call in on Saturday because I will be on a plane.
We'll figure that out off the air. Absolutely. Johnny Jet segment is always brought to you by the amazing Epson Fast Photo Scanner. Preserve what's priceless with the Epson Fast Photo, the world's fastest personal photo scanner in its class. Easily restore, save, share, and organize your photos with the Epson Fast Photo Scanner. Johnny Jet is at johnnyjet.com. Always a good read. Follow him on Twitter at Johnny Jet and on Instagram too. And see him or hear him here every week. Thank you, Johnny.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry you're not feeling too good.
Yeah, it's just my voice. I feel pretty good.
Oh, you feel all right. It sounds like everybody there is a little under the weather anyway. It's one of those.
I went to Florida the week before. I came back. My wife was sick and her sister who was visiting was sick. And then her mom came in and she got sick from them. And then now I'm starting to get it.
We try to make employees who are ill stay home.
So did you go see Steve Martin's show?
No, I already saw that. I saw the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Okay. And where did you stay?
And Bruce Springsteen. We stayed at a hotel I really like because we try to stay, if we're only going to shows in the theater district, it's called the Chatwall. We stayed at the W Times Square, which was a little too much
too
for
hip.
Me. Too hip. The Chatwall is like a hunt club. Everything's trimmed with leather. The bedside tables are leather suitcases, and they have a leather coaster to put on the leather suitcase. But the service was out of this world. I mean, they were so great. It has a great restaurant there, the Lambs Club. It was the Lambs Club, which was a Broadway theater club for many years. And the Chatwal, I guess, is an Indian entrepreneur who hotelier. And this is one of their luxury. It's a SPG.
Did you get your Marriott points?
I can't find my Marriott account. I think I'm probably glad I can't.
Well, you should always be getting your
points. Hackers.
So call them up. Yeah,
as the hacker. I know.
Call them up and get. That's one of the benefits of staying at the Luxury Collection.
It's part of the Luxury Collection. You know about the Chatwal.
Yeah, I just looked it up. I heard of it before.
Stay there if you get a chance. It's so nice. I really.
When I was in New York
it.
2 weeks ago, we stayed at the JW Essex House, which I get my.
Ooh,
Marriott
I
points,
love the Essex House. You know, guests of the Tonight Show stay at the Essex House.
Yeah, that's what they said.
It's right in the park, which is nice.
It's right in the park, exactly. And then a couple days ago, I stayed at the Conrad, which is right next to the One World Trade Center. It's too far downtown for me, but it's a beautiful hotel. It's a Hilton, obviously.
Oh, that's
it's a Conrad.
Good. We try different hotels. It's across the street from the Millennium Broadway where I've stayed, and I liked that, but I haven't stayed there in a long time.
Well, the Conrad is spot. I actually got a hard hat tour of it in 2011.
Oh, good. We'll try that.
It used to be an NBC Suites. It's all suites. 463 rooms, and the shower is the best.
That's one of the problems with Manhattan hotels is even the suites tend to be tiny.
Yeah, this was not tiny.
Nice.
This was good.
We stayed at the Sofitel and really liked it. That's also
I stayed there multiple times this summer,
a nice
actually.
Hotel. And that's down right there in the Times Square. Anyway, I had dinner with Steve and his beautiful wife, and he apparently listens to the show. He's probably listening right now, and he said, Johnny Jett. I love Johnny Jett, so I just thought I'd pass
that along. That really makes my day. I can't wait to tell my wife. So.
It's kind of amazing myself. I'm flabbergasted.
Well, I've been a big fan of his. Since
who
the
is
jerk.
It?
I'm
right?
a little.
Yeah,
and,
who is
and
it?
I just yeah. watched. I just watched him the other day in something.
There
I
you go. Well, next time you watch him, think of him watching you. All right, Johnny.
Take care.
Have a good one. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Yeah, you know, I should talk to Johnny Jett about that reverb mic. They have, and a lot of hotels now have rain showers, which I don't like. And Lisa hates because it gets her hair wet. And I would rather have a needle shower than a rain shower. But I guess everybody wants a rain shower now. She said we have to ask from now on ahead of time and not stay there if it has a rain shower. Oh, yeah. DJ Chick Chick Boom in the house. Stevie did that to me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We went to see Stevie Wonder. And, you know, everybody's waiting for him to play Superstition. And he has a bit that he does in the middle of the concert. He calls DJ Chick Chick Boom, where he plays samples and stuff. And he played that sample of that. Who could not recognize that synthesizer sound, the beginning of Superstition? And everybody goes, yeah, and then he stops. And it's just so frustrating. But he did play it later. You got to play it. You're Stevie. You got to play Superstition. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. We saw the Bruce Springsteen show when we were in New York. Wow, is that just a moving, touching, brilliant show, a lot of talking. It comes, I think, from his book, his memoir that he published last year. And he tells his life story, talks a lot about his mom and his dad and his career, and then sings almost all, I would say, all of his biggest hits acoustically with just a guitar. And it's fantastic. And I shouldn't really recommend it because he's closing the show this week. But... And I'm sure tickets have been long sold out for the remaining few performances. But December 14th or 15th, it makes its way to Netflix. So if you get a chance to see it, if you're a Springsteen, if you like The Boss, Rattle the Jewels, Go see it on Netflix. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Scott is on the line from Orange County, California. Hello, Scott.
Leo, how's it going?
It's well. How are you?
I'm looking at the golf course. It's a beautiful day in Orange County.
Oh, man. I'm jealous. Well, I take it you were at Amazon's event.
Yeah, the reInvent 2018.
They announced like 5,000 new products at reInvent. It was mind-boggling.
Were you there?
I was not. I was here, but I, of course, read about it. You were there, though.
Yeah, we did some filming, a little half an hour kind of overview.
Oh, nice. Is that on YouTube? Where can I see that?
We're sort of working on, you know, making it a little cleaner, but get you...
Email Leo at techguylabs.com when you got a final version. We'll put it in the show notes. Because this was an amazing event. Reinvent is about Amazon's web services, which I think people know Amazon as a retailer of products, place you go to do your shopping, may not be aware of it, but the biggest business for Amazon is selling servers and web services. And they have a massive, AWS it's called, is massive. And reInvent...
45,000 of some of the smartest, you know, hardcore computer people on planet Earth paid $1,700.
Wow. 5 days. Wow. I bought the Deep Racer car. It'll come in the spring. That was the most crowd-pleasing announcement because it's a physical car. It's a toy car, but you use it to learn deep learning techniques, and then you can pit your car against other cars. Amazon, of course, will learn a lot about autonomous driving, and you'll learn a lot about how to create autonomous vehicles. I think it sounds kind of fun. What else did you like there?
Okay, here's the crazy part. Yeah, I went with a guy that's really into the whole technology and data stuff, so he was kind of...
He was in heaven.
Yeah, and probably the craziest thing I learned was, you know, they're moving everything from your local storage of your company, large and small, to the cloud, and that way you're only paying for what you use. But most of those people were software. And so instead of like how you have like 100 apps for your phone and I got 100 apps for my phone, it's allowing the software people to develop an app to let you increase the way you can parse data, use data, leverage data. And so you write that and I see what you wrote and then I write an app that accelerates what you did and then somebody types an app that accelerates what I did. And all of a sudden you've got like literally thousands of people collaborating to synthesize the power of data up in the cloud. It was crazy.
You know, there is such an opportunity right now because of the internet and big data for the world to change. And you know what's in the way, unfortunately, is that every company, whether it's Amazon or Google or Apple or Facebook, has its own, we call them silos because they're like corn silos. They're isolated. Its own isolated data sets. And while they all, I think, to some degree or another, pretend to be open about it, for the most part, they're competing with one another. So the things Google learns, they don't share with Apple. The things Apple learns, they don't share with Amazon. Amazon does seem to have the most open of the bunch, though, point of view. I think they provide the back-end services, which allow other people to collaborate. And I think that's really important. We could change the world if companies weren't so desperate to keep their knowledge and profits to themselves.
Well, I based on what I saw my friend kind of dialing me in, right? We went there because he says Amazon is completely crushing Google.
They own this. Yeah. Although what companies are doing mostly is now not depending on any one. A lot of our web stuff is through Amazon. But the best way to do it is to have a little Google, little Amazon, little Microsoft. That way, if one goes down, as all do from time to time, you've got another choice. You can also kind of optimize that way. But Amazon, clearly the leader here. I think people who, when you hear Amazon, you think, oh, yeah, that's where I get my Beanie Babies. But really, Amazon Web Services is by far the biggest part of their revenue and their business. It was just an afterthought. That's the funny thing. Amazon was a retailer. That's how they started. Some bright boy at Amazon said, you know, we've got all this computer power. We don't use it all the time. A lot of it sits dormant waiting to be used. Why don't we sell access to it? And that turned out to be a huge business, a multi-billion dollar business for Amazon. They've been doing it now for 12 years, and they're beating, you're right, they're beating everybody else. It's kind of amazing. Yeah.
The artificial intelligence piece is, you know, we're just barely scratching the surface on how that's all going to play out. But this machine learning thing that's going on, these guys talk to you for half an hour about it, and you kind of walk away scratching your head trying to figure out exactly what all this means.
I think a lot of programmers use Amazon's services for a variety of things, but the total scope of it is probably out of any one person's reach. I mean, you're right. Artificial intelligence, machine learning, blockchain. They announced some blockchain products. They have their finger in every pie. And you're seeing this with Amazon, too. I mean, they're bidding for the 22 regional sports stations, including the Yankees Entertainment Network, the sports network. That's an interesting thing. Amazon wants to acquire regional sports networks. Why? Well, because they want to acquire everything. Amazon's goal, Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world's goal, is to get a fraction of every economic transaction that occurs on the planet, even if he only gets a penny for every transaction. That's trillions of dollars. And it's an interesting goal to have. And one of the ways you have it is by providing a huge range of services and just make sure that, you know, people get to do all sorts of creative, interesting things like artificial intelligence, but Amazon gets a little bit, gets the crumbs. Just a little bit. That's all we ask. Just, 1% of every transaction ever worldwide. Interestingly, they're not a global power yet. They're starting to be, but there are bigger players in China and India right now than Amazon. Those are very big economies. And so Amazon's biggest challenge at this point is how do they go more global? And that's actually difficult because of privacy regulations, national regulations that require servers be hosted in those countries. Things like that are making it a little bit more challenging. And in fact, I don't think that's a bad thing. This is going to be a conversation we'll have over the next 10 years, but have these tech companies gotten too big and too powerful? And there are many people who think that's the case. Hey, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little teensy-weensy break. Come back with more of your calls right after this. Our show today brought to you, what a world we live in, huh? Our show today brought to you by LastPass. It's really imperative that you protect yourself online. You know that. And, of course, one of the real issues with security is passwords. We see data breaches all the time. I think of people who had Starwood Group accounts, right, and use that password because that doesn't have to be secure, right? Use that password on 100 other sites. And now that Starwood's been hacked, all those other sites are vulnerable as well. A password manager is what you need to protect you. And if you're in business, that goes double. LastPass is the password manager. It's the one I use. I've used it for a decade. It's one Steve Gibson uses. That should be telling. It's the one we use at work here. We use LastPass Enterprise. It lets employees share passwords, use passwords without letting them run wild. It keeps access to corporate data secure. Every employee gets their own secure vault for managing and accessing passwords. You can share a password without giving the employee the password, which is very handy. That means they can't then pass it along to their buddy. You can set master password requirements, enable password resets, restrict access when needed. When an employee leaves, they lose access. We believe in LastPass so much, we give every employee at TWIT a LastPass personal account and a LastPass enterprise account. They get both free. I think that's really important because we want our employees to be secure and we really want to keep our stuff, our databases, our websites, our bank accounts secure. You have over 100 different policies you can configure, access actionable security reports, create shared folders. We use that widely. There's a business department secure folder. There's a ops secure folder, and only people in those departments have access to those folders. We put everything in there too: database logins, SSH keys, software licenses, business information, our EIN number. I put my social security numbers, my passport images, my driver's license, my credit card, all that information stored in LastPass because it's safe, it's secure, and I can access it anywhere. I love LastPass. It works Mac, Windows, Linux, every phone I've got. In fact, it's the first application I install. Oh, and the LastPass Authenticators app is awesome because instead of giving you a 6-digit number you have to type in, it just pops up an approve, deny screen on the phone. Employees love that. Employees can log into LastPass with their Microsoft Active Directory credentials. If you're an Active Directory house, that's a very nice feature. One, literally only now one password to remember. Of course, the data in LastPass's vault is encrypted and decrypted only at device level. Even LastPass can't access it. More than 16 million people trust LastPass. It's the number one most preferred password manager. It's the one I use and recommend and tell all my friends and family, the people I care the most about, to use. They have LastPass Premium for personal use, LastPass Families for your entire family, LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. Go to LastPass.com/twit. Learn about their enterprise solution, their personal solution, and start using LastPass. It's my number one security recommendation. LastPass.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smartwatches. We got your augmented reality. We got your virtual reality. We got your real reality. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you'd like to talk high tech, 888-827-5536. I have been terrible today on getting the phone calls here. So let me focus. Focus, Leo. Poor Tim from Salina, Kansas, has been holding on for 2 hours now. Tim, I apologize.
Hey, that's all right, Leo.
Thank you.
You didn't do your podcast.
I didn't.
So I think that's where you are.
Oh, well, I better get going here. You think because I took some time off, not doing some shows, I'm a little lax. I have to talk. That's probably right, isn't it?
You're a little extra chatty today.
Yeah, I think you're right. I missed four podcasts during the week. Windows Weekly, Security Now, this week in Google, Mac Break Weekly. That's all the talking. You're right. So I got stuff to say. Poor Lisa saying, shut up. No, you got to hear it. Sorry. Thank you, though, for your patience, Tim. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's all right.
What can I do for you?
Well, it's time to upgrade my phone. And I have had Android phones since the very first Android phone.
Yes.
But I am actually thinking about getting an iPhone. I am tired of all the extra bloatware on Samsung
and
LG.
Tell me about it.
And I just want a vanilla phone.
There are vanilla Android phones, but one thing that does happen, it's not just the manufacturer of the handset, it's also the phone company. So if you go to a Verizon store and buy a phone, it's going to be loaded up with red colored icons, all the Verizon software, AT&T, T-Mobile even, they all put their software on there because turns out having an icon on your home screen is solid gold. So the way to avoid that is buying a phone direct. Like if you, for instance, if you wanted to stay with Android, got a Pixel, the Pixels are now highly discounted, which is a little frustrating for those of us who bought them in the first few weeks. So you can get pretty good deals, and just don't get it from a carrier. Even if you do get it from a carrier, Verizon has a very good deal, for instance, might save you a couple $100. You can disable or, in most cases, uninstall the apps that they provide. So you can clean it up. However, you're right. Apple doesn't have this problem. Apple's market clout means they can tell Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile and Sprint, don't put your stuff on our phone. And so all Apple iPhones have the same exact experience, which is really better, I think, for consumers. So what can I do to help you either stay in the Android world or move to the iPhone world?
Well, I guess how hard is it going to be on me to switch to an iPhone?
Well, you know, it's the same issue Mac to PC. It's going to be a little different. There'll be a learning curve. For instance, you know, the way notifications work on Android is very different from how they work on the iPhone. Going into the settings app on the iPhone requires actually launching an app. On Android, it's just a pull-down menu. And then once you get into settings, Apple will initially seem extremely confusing to you. Frankly, it's confusing to iPhone users as well. Apple has, you know, this is a problem with old platforms. As a platform ages, you just throw new stuff in, and you get so much stuff, and it's kind of it's like spaghetti. It just all so the settings app on iPhones is really a mess. But just like on Android, you'll end up using the search tool within settings to find the setting you're looking for. The biggest thing that you're going to not like is the constraints placed on the iPhone home screen. The iPhone is very simple. It hasn't changed much since 2007. Each application gets one and only one icon on your home screens that can be put in a folder. They added that finally. But it's in a folder. You can't have two of them. On Android, you can have an icon on the desktop and in a folder. There are no widgets. All you have is a grid of icons on an iPhone or icons plus folders. So it's an organization and information display on the iPhone is considerably constrained. On the other hand, I think, you know, once you get to using it, the phone works the same. The text messaging is the same. The camera's the same. There is a little issue with Apple's Messages, which is their text messaging program. Apple uses it to kind of promote iPhones. So people who you message with iPhones will have a better experience than people on Android phones that you message. And by the way, the Android phone folks are green bubbles. The iPhone folks are blue bubbles. That's a complicated thing, but you'll notice immediately. It's actually harder to get out of the Apple ecosystem than getting into it. Getting into it's pretty easy. It's like a nice warm bath. You can just dip yourself in because Apple wants you to stay. They do have the best smartwatch platform, far better than Android Wear. So if you decide you want to try an Apple Watch, that'll pair nicely with your iPhone and give you additional nice features. I like my Apple Watch. In general, computers are computers. They're all going to do the same thing. They're just going to do it in slightly different ways. So for the first week or two, you'll be in bizarro land. But by the time you get used to it, it's not so different. I use both all the time. I carry both a Pixel 3 XL and an iPhone XS Max in my pocket at all times. And I don't have any difficulty moving back and forth. It's pretty straightforward. It just takes a little time.
All right.
I think you'll like it, but I would say take the best camera easily of any phone out there now is the Pixel 3. Unbelievable, especially with that night shot. Better than Samsung, better than Apple, better than anybody. So if
the problem is I'm on Sprint and so I can't get the Pixel 3 through Sprint.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sprint is also bad at putting all those yellow icons on your phone. I know what you mean. So, yeah, you know what? No one ever went wrong buying an iPhone. Let me tell you the advantages. More secure, more private. That's a big, for a lot of people, that's the deciding advantage. The iPhone is more secure because Apple tightly controls the ecosystem. And it's more private because Apple makes money selling you hardware, not selling your information to advertisers. That's what Google and other Android devices makers do. So you do have that advantage going for you. I think the iPhone is a very good choice. Really, honestly, the best thing to do is pick a platform and stay with it. That's the best way to learn it. And one thing you will notice is almost all the same apps are available on both sides, although the most interesting, slickest apps generally come out on the iPhone first because there's more money in the iPhone ecosystem. iPhone users spend more money. I would take a look at, you may want to, unless you're really attached to the yellow guy, to Sprint, you might want to look at Google Fi, which is Google's version of Sprint. They use Sprint, T-Mobile, Cellular One.
I use too much data for that.
I don't know. I think that, here's the beauty of it. The way Google works.
I use over 100.
Wow. And Sprint has a good deal on that?
Yeah, well, they give you 50, and then after 50, they prioritize you.
Yeah.
Which basically means when I'm out in the boonies, I get full speed, but when I get hit the cities, I get slower.
Okay, it sounds like Sprint's the right choice for you. 100 gigabytes, you'd spend $1,000 on Google Fi.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You get prioritized at 15, not 50. So, yeah, it sounds like Sprint's the right deal for you.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm a truck driver, so I haven't had any problems with Sprint, and I've used all of the carriers.
See, that's interesting, because if there's a one knock on Sprint, it's that their network, I know in their ads they say it's 1% worse, but it's, boy, when there's no coverage, there's no coverage. And I find that they're on the good side of all of this is Sprint's been acquired, will soon merge with T-Mobile, and they're really adopting the newer networks fast. They made one error way back when they were going, instead of going to LTE, they went to WiMAX because they thought that was going to be a better technology. And it turned out to be a dud, and it put them way behind. It's kind of sad, but that simple business decision ended up really destroying Sprint. And that's why they had to, you know, they've been desperate to get investors. They sold out to SoftBank, and now they're merging with T-Mobile. And I think that will all be good for Sprint and T-Mobile users. Less good for the country because it's nice to have more choice. Competition's good. But nevertheless, Sprint and T-Mobile users will benefit. Enjoy your new iPhone. Look at the XR. That's a good deal. And I think just as good as the XS.
All righty.
And it comes in colors. Thank you for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am all at 8888 Ask Leo. We have a great website. It's free, open to all, techguylabs.com. I put links there to all the stuff we talk about. You don't have to write it down. And your comments are welcome too. Techguylabs.com. It's free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to the phones. We go, and line two is Kathy in Laurel, Maryland. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Leo. It's good speaking with you again, and forgive my cold, possibly.
Oh, I'm sorry you have one. It's that time of year, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, if you remember, I'm a blind user, and I'm on Windows 7, and the Windows Live Mail settings with Comcast apparently changed, and I didn't know, and access my mail one day, and since I wasn't having luck making the changes, I had someone come over, and he did it, and the mail that came back after he deleted and recreated the account left all that was in the server currently, you know, even though it's still POP3, and I can, under a subject search in the start menu of the computer, find every USO receipt, say, that I ever had that was in the mailbox, but I can't read the files. It says one time I tried unplugging the router to see what it would say, and it said something about a Reg A error.
Okay.
Or otherwise.
So there's two different issues here. So Comcast changed their settings. You had somebody come over and configure it. There's two different email settings. Two different kinds of servers. The old kind is POP or POP3. That's what you talked about, post office protocol. More modern is IMAP. Comcast offers both. And you're saying your friend set it up for POP access.
He did, because that's what it was originally.
I would set it to IMAP unless you know you want POP access. Comcast says, quote, using POP to retrieve email will cause a less than optimal experience.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah. So they strongly recommend IMAP. The reason POP was around and used widely for so many years is because POP used to download the mail from the server and erase it on the server. You have a copy. That's all you need, right? Now, along comes Gmail about 12 years ago, and Google said, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why should you ever worry about storing your own email? Leave it on our servers as much as you want. Because people do exactly what you just described. They search through email to find addresses, settings, receipts. It's a database of your history, of your life. And I often find myself saying, oh, I wish I got to find the name of that company that I bought that scooter from because it's junky and I can search back through my email and find that stuff. So the nice thing about having it on their server is they index it, they keep it, they back it up. You know, if you change computers, if you use mostly the reason this has happened is because people use phones, laptops, desktops. They have multiple computers, computers at home, computers at work. And IMAP means this mail will be the same on all of them. POP does not. POP means you have one computer with all your email, and that's the only place. So it's really an old-fashioned protocol. It used to be internet service providers preferred it because it didn't waste their disk space. But nowadays, disk space is so cheap, companies like Comcast are saying, no, use IMAP. It's better for everybody. So that's one thing you might look at. It's easy to do. Get your friend to come back. I know it's hard with a screen reader to do this. So get your friend, if you can, to come back and set it up for IMAP. Now, I don't, that's one problem, but that's the second problem, not being able to read those receipts may have something more to do with what the receipts are stored in, although it is possible that it's corrupted on your local drive. And again, this is where IMAP would excel. If you haven't deleted it from Comcast servers, you may have, because if you're using Popmail, that's what it does, unless you say otherwise. Right, there may be a good copy on the Comcast servers, is what I'm saying, crossing my fingers.
Well, I kind of don't think so, because...
You know, just you were deleting it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, one way to check is to use your browser, because Comcast, like most mail providers these days, also has a browser-based interface. So you could go to your Comcast.net account, go to the email there, and see if those mails are still there. If they are, you have a better chance of reading it. Do you know what format those receipts were in? Were they PDFs?
No, I had just saved the email messages. I mean, not saved them, but...
They were in your email. They were in your live mail account.
Yeah, and then somehow they're all on my computer, but I can't read them.
Well, and that's the question is, it depends on... If it's a format, so it could be in a format that your computer doesn't have a program to read currently. Do you know what the file name extension is? You know, the three letters after the dot?
I think .eml.
So that those are just plain text emails. Those should be readable. But you may it may be that live mail, you know, the other problem with this is that Microsoft has completely changed its mail. It's free mail program. Remember, it used to be Outlook Express. Then it became Live Mail. Now it's just mail. And as they change it over time, it may be that they can't read that EML format anymore. But EML format is, unless Microsoft's doing something funny, and goodness knows they could, plain text format. So if you can find that file, you might just be able to open it in Notepad. Let me just see what Microsoft does with its EML messages.
It's not letting me do anything with it because that message is
what that says is I don't know what it says. I don't know what it is. I can't read it,
of course.
And that's what that Reg A, I believe that's what that Reg A message is. That's a little more tricky. It should be you should be able to open it. Yeah, I'm seeing here Microsoft saves it in plain text file. You should be able to open it with Notepad. So what you got to do is find where that file lives. You know, open it up in Explorer and then drag it into Notepad or open Notepad and open it directly. And you should be able to read it. If it's a .eml file, it should be just plain text. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's a tough one, Kathy, because that's why we don't recommend POP anymore. That's the only copy that exists anymore of that USO receipt. So if you can't read it, you're kind of...
I can't even delete them anymore now.
See, I wonder where they live and what's been going on with them. This is why you should get that friend back and make it IMAP. That way, at least, there'll always be a good copy stored on Comcast servers.
Right.
And if you change computers, which you will at some point, you don't have to think about it, right? Mm-hmm. Now you've got one copy. You got to back it up and restore it. And if it's damaged, which it might be, you're not going to be able to read those. So
thankfully, I printed out everything.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh, that's good. So you're not. That's a good form of backup, by the way. Even if you're blind, that's a good form of backup. Did you print them in Braille or are you just...
Oh, for the receipts, I did it in print because I need them for tax purposes.
I see. Yeah. The IRS is not good at reading Braille, I'm sure.
Right.
So, I mean, printing is not a bad way to back up stuff. There is a program called...
And I can always find those,
I would. I would, the next time your buddy comes over, have her make it an IMAP server. The same place that she found the POP information is right above it. There's IMAP information. You know, you read that page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's you just change those settings. You'll be happier. It won't delete your mail. It'll keep a copy. If you change computers, your mail will still be there. And then your next task is to figure out how to save that mail that's on your hard drive. One solution the chat room's suggesting might work. Thunderbird, which unfortunately is no longer supported, but was a very good email client, does read those EML files. So you might be able to download, install Thunderbird, and then search. You'll have to use Thunderbird. This might be your friend's job, too. I don't know. You figure out how to point Thunderbird to your Outlook Live Mail, Windows Live Mail, and import it. And it may then, somebody's saying he found John in Florida says he was able to find a Thunderbird plugin that would automatically do that. That would be the easiest, because then you could automatically import your Thunderbird email or your Live Mail email into Thunderbird. And that might be sufficient to save the data. But it may also be the case that the mail store is corrupted somehow, and that's why you can't read it. If that's the case, then, you know, that's probably too late.
Right. Okay, well, I really appreciate the input.
Anytime, Kathy. I'm glad to talk to you.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Bye.
See ya. Yeah, it's alive and well, but I don't know if it's under. Let me look at the website. Mozilla dropped it. Are there people still working on it? Well, it's still Mozilla. It does look like they are keeping it up to date. All right, man, maybe that's changed, because for a while, I guess they have enough people. I guess it's being continue to be updated. That's good. I will stop saying Thunderbird is dead. Mozilla had announced they were going to stop development. Oh, Mozilla says we're hiring again. Good. Good, because Thunderbird's good. I've moved to ClawsMail, which I really like, also open source. Thanks to Big Pee-wee, our musical director. He's slapping that bass. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I guess I will have to stand corrected. Thunderbird, which had been abandoned, I thought, by Mozilla, the folks who do Firefox, is back, baby. They're even hiring new developers. So Thunderbird, which is an excellent and always has been an excellent email program, is in active development still. So that's very good news. Latest version of Thunderbird 60. And I must have missed the announcement. Because it was a big deal when Mozilla said, yeah, we're not going to keep working on Thunderbird. They're not going to do that anymore. Good news. Thunderbird is an excellent free open source email program. It's kind of like Firefox, kind of like using Firefox instead of Internet Explorer. Speaking of which, Microsoft seems to have thrown in the towel on Edge. This is a shocker. People who installed Windows 10 were strongly encouraged to use the Microsoft Edge browser, their new generation browser. But apparently nobody liked it. When it first came out, Edge was very limited. It couldn't do a lot of the things that Chrome and Firefox can do. And I think Microsoft has realized that people are just downloading Chrome. That's not what they want. Even though when you do, Edge complains. Of course, Chrome complains when you go to a Google site and says, why aren't you using Chrome? And I think part of the problem with Edge was it didn't work as well as Chrome on a lot of websites. 3 years ago, Microsoft put out Edge saying, this is it, the future of browsing. A couple of days ago, Microsoft said, yeah, maybe not. So they're going to start using Chromium as the Edge engine, which means they're basically turning into Chrome, which will make a lot of Chrome users happy. Makes me a little unhappy because we were talking last hour about the dominance that these big companies like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon have. They're just getting bigger and more powerful. And I always think it's a great thing that you can get Firefox and Thunderbird, these non-Microsoft products, that your browser, I liked it that you could use Edge or Internet Explorer instead of Chrome. While there's certain advantages to everybody using the same browser, it's on the other hand, becomes what they call a monoculture. And that's problematic. It's good to have competition. Chrome now has 60% market share. You'd think number two would be Edge. We were talking about the tyranny of defaults. People just use the default browser, and Edge is the default browser on Windows 10. But no, the number two browser is Internet Explorer. This is on the desktop. Internet Explorer does come with Windows 10, but it's carefully hidden away. They want you to use Edge. I guess people really didn't want to use Edge. Edge is actually not, as it's evolved, it's a pretty decent browser. It uses the plugins I needed to use. Not all the plugins in the world. And it does most web pages quite well. But it's dead. In effect, they're going to still, I guess, still call it Edge. But because they're going to use the Chrome engine, it's really Chrome with a skin on top. This is the new Microsoft. And in years past, Microsoft would never have thought of doing that. Of all the companies in the world, the one you'd least expect to be open is Microsoft. And now they are becoming, in many ways, the open platform for computing. They don't even expect you to use Windows anymore. Use whatever you want, they say, as long as you use us somehow. Steve, Nashville, Tennessee, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. Glad to talk to you. And shout out to Big Pee Wee. Man, he has been spinning the tunes. I am thoroughly enjoying it.
Oh, thank you. Hey, Damien, you hear that? They love you out there.
Oh, man. We love him out here. He has got it going on. Okay.
He's great. He is. He's a great musical director.
He really is. Okay. Here's my problem. A year ago, I bought an HP Color LaserJet printer, right? I have two computers. I have an Asus all-in-one and an Asus laptop. Got the printer installed. Haven't had a problem. No big deal. I don't download third-party software. I'm the only user of these two computers. And about 3 weeks ago, I went to print something out, and it started printing garbage with, like, ad stuff in it, coupons.
Oh, man.
Yeah, where the hell is that coming from?
Which browser are you using? Let me guess. Microsoft Edge.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I've tried it in Internet Explorer. I tried typing a document in WordPad. Same thing.
Yeah, you've got some malware.
Where?
It's probably something called Coupon Printer, although there are others that will do this. Unfortunately, and this really galls me, but there are a lot of download sites like CBS Interactive's download.com and SoftPedia.
Well,
and stuff.
See, and I don't use that stuff because of the wrappers they use.
Right.
I don't use that kind of crap just for that very reason.
Well, that's exactly right. When you go to download.com or Softonic, it will download a special downloader, and built into it will be stuff like this coupon printer. So.
And it's happening on both my computers, my laptop and my all-in-one.
Yeah. This is the problem when you get, there's a hijacker in there somewhere because are you eventually getting the page?
No, when I print it, it just doesn't print. It just, there'll be bits and pieces of what I've typed in there, but it's, you know, save $500 coupon, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, man.
Code, and it's
so
like,
it's what
know.
We call, it's malware, period.
And I went through ad remove programs, but I can't find anything obvious to get rid of it.
Yeah, because it's an extension. It's a browser extension. So it's what we call a BH.
Would that affect even typing something into WordPad?
Well, anytime you print, it would, because what it does is it captures the print stream.
Gotcha.
And instead of printing what you want, that's very annoying.
No kidding.
This might be, I don't often recommend malware bytes, but this might be a good place to go for at least detecting it. I know, I don't like to, generally, it's been my experience that these programs, while they're useful, aren't as complete as one would hope. So if you're going to get malware bytes, it's okay to get malware bytes as long as you get it from malwarebytes.com, B-Y-T-E-S.
Gotcha.
And then run it.
Uh-huh.
And it will probably find this. It's called a browser hijacker object, or it might be a replacement print driver.
Yeah, I can't imagine where I got it from, because like I say, I'm so careful about what I download. I just don't go arbitrarily putting stuff on the system. I'm real careful. And the fact that it hit not only my main all-in-one, but it hit my laptop, too.
Yeah. Nowadays, you know, there's kind of different classes of malware. There's malware that's out to get you, you know, try to get credit card numbers, stuff like that. That's actually the least common, although ransomware still remains the most common form of infection. So I guess I shouldn't say that because ransomware is all about getting money out of you. There's malware that hijacks your router and other devices with an aim towards attacking the internet. And then there's adware. Adware is designed to make money for the malware author by, you know, getting you to click links or putting up links, putting ads on pages, or in this case, this is really annoying malware, printing ads to your printer. Wow. Malware bytes will tell you what it is if it knows about it, and I'm pretty sure it will. When you get the name, Google it, and you'll see the various routes of infection. And there will be something you did, and unfortunately, it sounds like you're smart. You're careful. You don't fall for this stuff. But if you don't see anything in ad remove programs, it's malware. That's one of the definitions of malware. It doesn't give you a chance to uninstall it. But if you don't see coupon printer or something like that in your ad remove programs, then it does sound like something's infecting your system. Malware bytes will detect it and remove it. The reason I don't often recommend it is because there may be other stuff there that Malwarebytes doesn't detect, and you might be, you know, operating just, well, Scott, well, I'm all fixed, everything's fine, and instead you're still infected. So that's not good. I would at least be careful from now on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Printer Exploitation Toolkit.
I appreciate that love.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
It's true.
True.
That's good. Thank you. Turn the dick around. Dick DiBartolo. I'm sorry, the beat around. Mad's maddest writer and our disco fool. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you? How was your visit to the city?
I'm sorry we didn't get together. We were a whirlwind trip, but I did say hi to Bruce Springsteen for you.
Oh, good. Okay, very good.
It was a lot of fun. It was cold. You were right. You gave me the weather forecast ahead of time, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm sorry about
that. But I didn't get
that.
To make it to Disneyland. I hear it's colder now, though, so.
Oh, it is.
I apologize.
You can see the frost coming from my mustache.
Dick is Mad's maddest writer, has been for decades. He's also a gadget hound, a gizmo wizard, if you will, and joins us each week with interesting, useful gadgets for us. What do you have for us this week?
Yeah, well, you know what? Two things I'm taking to see. Are you going to CES? Last
I
time
wish
you thought...
I were, but I'm...
Oh, you're not.
Well, it's too short notice. I should have planned it better.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So well, you're know, going for things... me. You're our eyes and ears on CES. It's the big Las Vegas. It used to stand for Consumer Electronics Show, but now they say it stands for nothing.
Oh, do they?
Kind of like me. It's a good thing.
No, you stand for a lot. I'll tell you that.
I stand for the right to buy.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're going to go. You're excited about this?
Excited? No. This is, I think, year 30.
Oh,
so.
See, this is why I thought at some point I didn't have to go anymore. But now I'm thinking I'm kind of missing it. It's a zoo. It's crazy. It's insane. No one can cover it.
Yeah. They are expecting 177,000 people this time.
That's saying something. When every other trade show is dying, CES is growing.
It is. It is. And so the thing I am going to talk about are business cards. When you go to CES, you get 1,000 business cards. And I come home and I put them in a hotel, in the hotel drawer, and then in the suitcase. And then I put some of them in my jacket. And they're all over the place. So actually, Chad put me onto this. The business card filing cabinet. Okay.
Is this a physical thing?
Yes, Leo. It is like a big filing cabinet scaled down. It holds 800 business cards.
In alphabetical order.
In alphabetical order. Well, you have to do the alphabet. I wish you could throw them in there. And when you opened it, they were in alphabetical order. But they're not. For some strange reason, there's a digital clock on the top drawer. But
wait a minute. So it's got a clock too?
It has a little clock.
That's so cute.
It's very cute. But the thing that I found that I'm excited to bring with me is I carry a lot of business cards. And, you know, you take them out and you have – sometimes they're in an envelope. Sometimes I have a little leather folder. On Amazon, I found a miniature aluminum suitcase that looks just like the
– Well, you are like ready for CES.
Yes.
It's like business card sized?
It's business card size. It's stainless steel. Yeah. It is so, I think people, and it has little click open pads on the side. Aww. And a little handle. I think when you open your business cards and people are going to say, what in the world? And like, I had it custom made.
You know, I think you should get a little tiny handcuff to handcuff it to your pinky.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So then it will, people will know how valuable those cards are. That's hysterical.
And you know what? They're like $10.50. And if you're not in a hurry, I put a link on my website. There's a place. They wouldn't even get here in time for Christmas, but they're $5.
Oh, that's a lot less than my card case.
Yeah, they're aluminum.
Oh, look how cute that is. It says mad.
They're very clever, and they have locking clips here, and a little. You know,
You look like a giant spy.
Exactly. Yeah. When I go through security, I'm going to say, "Do you have to X-ray this, or can I carry my luggage?"
If you could only see, but actually, you can if you go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick Sighton. You click the tech guy. The Gizwiz visits the tech guy. I feel like business. I have a business card.
Oh,
case.
That's
it's just
decent.
A traditional, decent. Cost a lot more than yours
George
did.
Oh, Jensen. Whoa.
Yeah, it's fancy. Oh,
okay. You know what?
But that's, what do I need? This is so primitive. The idea of giving people a bit of cardboard with your phone number on it is crazy.
And what really drives me crazy is people, they think it's cute, and it is cute, when they give you oversized business cards.
No.
Or business
they
cards.
They won't fit in your special little filing cabinet. So what I do if people give me a business card, I immediately just take a picture of it.
You see that?
I don't want to carry it around. And I use a program that I like called Full Contact. It's not a free program, but it will actually take a picture of a business card and add it to your contact list.
Does it take all the information and put it in the proper place, like phone number and address?
It does, because a human does it. A human does it. So it takes a little while.
A human does it?
Well, that's why you have to pay a subscription. It's not huge. Oh, it's $20 or $30 a year. But the idea is a human, you know, some poor person in India is going to get all my business cards and transcribe
The human doesn't follow you around.
No, it's not a human in your pocket.
And say, give me that card. Hang on.
No, but that way, so now I throw that business card out.
I think that's
good. And you know what I actually most often will do? I'll say, no, wait a minute, when somebody tries to give me a business card, let me take a picture of that so you can keep it, because I know they're expensive. They're like 50 cents each. Well, you probably don't pay that much.
No. They print them up. They say, if I can keep 100 of these, I'll print them for free.
I mean, nowadays you go to Vistaprint, it's cheap to make a business card. But a good, nice, high-quality card, the more glossy, the more colors, they can end up being quite expensive. So I say, look, I'm going to save you a little bit of money. I'm going to take a picture. It'll then be in my Rolodex, and then I don't have to worry about writing it in. Although I like this file cabinet.
I know. And the only problem with that is people want me to autograph the back of the card, so I'll have to autograph their phone.
That's a good point.
I'll just write madly on their new iPhone.
Briefly, IBM had a thing years ago. They did this at Comdex, where you had some device in your shoe, and then when you shook somebody's hand, the capacitance of the device in their shoe, they had to have one too, and your shoe, they would see the connection, and it would give your contact information through your hand to the person's shoe. Whatever happened to that? It probably costs $400, and it only works if everybody has one in their shoe.
Yes, only if you had a 9.5-inch foot, because they couldn't make shoes for everybody. That is bizarre.
We've been trying to solve this problem for a long time. There just isn't a good way to do it. I guess business cards are still the best, but I don't want to keep them. I don't want to come home with a suitcase full.
No, I think that solution
Although that little file cabinet's pretty cute.
The little file cabinet is cute, and my little carry case is cute,
I love your carry case. I bet people remember you.
I bet they will.
Go to gizwiz.biz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z.B-I-Z. Click the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy link. You'll see images and links on Amazon for both of these fine products. And then while you're there, there's one more link you might want to click, the What the Heck Is It contest. Only a couple of weeks left, 3 weeks left, to figure out what this is. It's a close-up picture of something on the website. If you can identify it, you're in the running for an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Funny thing is, even if you identify it wrong, you're in the running for the 20 Dumbest of 2018. Second week in a row, the president's had the cover. Second year in a row, the president's had the cover on that.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly. Yep. I wonder why.
He never talks about how many Mad Magazine covers he's had. He doesn't.
Yeah. No, I don't know why. I'm not quite sure understand why.
Dick DiBartolo, gizwiz.biz. Don't forget his podcast, gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. See you next week.
Yeah, before you go to CES, and then we'll get a CES update when you come back.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you, Dickie D.
Bye.
Thanks once again, Damian, Big Pee-wee, for spinning the discs. To our phone angel, Kim Schaffer, for answering the calls. Thanks to you for calling. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week at Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.